From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President-elect Joe Biden will be entering office as the husband of an educator and former public school teacher. After 4 years of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos's policies, how can Biden reverse the legacy of the pro-Trump right-wing ideologue? Schools have been deeply impacted during the coronavirus pandemic, and some 1 million children have been infected. Not only has the virus exposed existing inequities in our education system, it's also gutted state funding sources for education. The challenges that Biden faces on this front are indeed quite steep. My guest is Miriam Rollin, director of the Education Civil Rights Alliance, convened by the National Center for Youth Law. Welcome to the program, Miriam.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
So before we get to the impact of the pandemic on education, let's talk about DeVos's legacy in general. She came into her position overtly being somebody who had an agenda that was antithetical to public education, right?
That would be accurate.
So she has had this approach that has favored charter schools, so-called school choice, religious schools. How much of her agenda did she actually realize over 4 years?
Well, the high attention issues of more funding for private schools, actually, she really didn't accomplish very much at all. She had proposed legislation to provide more funding for private schools. That didn't go anywhere. She had actually tried to misdirect some of the CARES Act funding that Congress had allocated for COVID response in schools to provide more funding to private schools than they were actually entitled to under the statute. And the courts actually slapped her down for that. So that is no longer happening. So her agenda in terms of privatization of public education actually, I would say, was wholly unsuccessful. Unfortunately, she did make quite a few changes in terms of underlying policies within the Department of Education and practices and staffing, things like changes to guidance and regulations, undermining the role of the Office of Civil Rights that protects the rights of marginalized, vulnerable children in our nation in schools. And she also undermined the enforcement of civil rights in a number of court cases. So really, her legacy is not on the privatization issue. It's really more on undermining civil rights. But that's something that we hope the Biden administration will address.
And I want to get to that. DeVos has also been pretty strictly anti-union in recent days. She has gone even more on the offensive. And I want to quote from one of the tweets that she posted. She linked to a Washington Post editorial, and she said the editorial board is right. When unions win, kids lose. She is someone who has, essentially seen teachers' unions as the enemy of education, right?
I think in many cases, that is her perspective. And, you know, it's really sad. I mean, teachers' unions all over the country are fighting to try and have better public education for our students. There was just a ballot initiative passed in Arizona, and the Red for Ed teachers' union efforts were a big part of that success. And so, teachers are doing their best in very difficult circumstances right now, but she has definitely been no friend of educators.
So what about education in the United States during the pandemic? We've seen the virus disproportionately impact Black and brown communities. Has the impact of the virus been felt disproportionately by kids in Black and brown communities as well on the education front?
Absolutely. You know, everyone's probably heard about the digital divide and the fact that many Black and brown kids are unable to participate in education because of inadequate devices, inadequate broadband, or a combination of the two, often inadequate ability to navigate the systems provided. So there's really a big problem in terms of many kids actually just being absent from education during remote learning. We really do need to get kids back into school safely because the learning in person, particularly for marginalized students, is really essential. There are some students that really can't benefit from distance learning at all.
And of course, there's a huge gap in access to technology.
Absolutely. And, you know, the sad part is, in addition to all of the ways that she undermined public education throughout her tenure as secretary, she also showed an utter lack of leadership in addressing this crisis. You know, in a crisis, good leaders rise up, or bad leaders are shown to be bad leaders. And this really was the case. I mean, from the get-go, her department issued guidance in terms of special education in COVID. And they did it twice. And that's because on March 12th, they issued guidance saying, well, you know, kids with disabilities, if they shut down all of their education programs, they don't have to do anything for kids with disabilities. Well, that's actually not the law. IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, requires the education for kids with disabilities. And so, so then on the March 21st, they issued subsequent guidance. But this is just endemic of the approach of the administration, which is to do little. And frankly, what they do is legally wrong and often confusing for schools, for students, for parents.
And wasn't Betsy DeVos's approach to the pandemic to simply demand schools reopened, which was part of the broader Trump approach? You know, we're not going to do anything about having a national strategy on containing the virus, but we simply are going to require, demand, insist that schools just reopen and take their chances. Unions rose up saying, you know, our safety of our teachers is at stake, safety of our children is at stake. We can't do that. Unions were painted as the enemy of children, when in fact there was no leadership provided from the education department about how to properly and safely reopen schools. In fact, just this week, the CDC's guidelines, and the CDC has been so deeply politicized, the CDC's guidelines on reopening schools just quietly disappeared.
Yes, isn't that amazing? You know, it again, lack of leadership. The CDC should be looked to as the gold standard of information and truth with regard to something as crucial as COVID. And yet we find political involvement in the guidance being provided in terms of school reopening, among other things. And, you know, again, kids do need to be in school. They need to be in school safely, and the teachers need to be in school safely. And so good leadership nationally would be, number one, addressing COVID in a much more effective way, trying to really use the bully pulpit to make sure everyone's wearing masks and everyone's washing hands and everyone's distancing and everyone's doing the public health measures that can help prevent spread. But also, you know, really galvanizing our nation around making sure we have the PPE we need, making sure we have the tests we need, making sure we have the contact tracing. You know, none of this has been effectively administered by this administration. So it's just a continual lack of leadership on COVID that has brought us to where we are now, with, you know, just even recently, New York City schools saying, no, we're going to have to close.
Right. New York City was among the first to reopen, although they were among the first to get hit the hardest nationally, learned a lot of lessons, and actually have done a pretty decent job of preventing outbreaks within the school system. But just with this massive surge in infections going up across the country, with the weather getting colder, people moving indoors, we're seeing infection rates rise. And now New York City schools might also have to shut down once more. Let's look at what we might expect under a Biden administration. Now, we have, of course, the benefit of looking back on Biden's many years in office. You could maybe look at Arnie Duncan, who was the education secretary under the Obama-Biden administration, who was not necessarily very popular among public school teachers. He, of course, you could also say that Biden wasn't the one that chose him. Obama was. So in comes Biden with Jill at his side. The incoming first lady is a strong proponent of public education. What do you hope for on the public education front under Biden?
Well, the first thing that they should do, and I hope they will do right out of the gate, is to undo the many illegal and harmful pieces of guidance and regulations and OCR, Office of Civil Rights approaches, and approaches in court cases. So, you know, things like the rescission, the DeVos rescission of the Title IX guidance on transgender students' access to facilities, or DeVos's regulations on Title IX sexual assault, undermining the protections for victims of sexual assault in education, things like guidance about addressing race discrimination in school discipline. DeVos got rid of that. She rescinded guidance on affirmative action in, or how colleges could consider race in admissions, and also how K-12 schools can legally pursue voluntary desegregation approaches. You know, there are many things that she did that I am hoping President-elect Biden, right off the bat, will undo. But there are even more subtle and yet in some ways even more impactful things that we hope Biden will do. Things like restaffing the Office of Civil Rights. You know, the staffing went down significantly, and that really hampers the ability of children's civil rights in education to be protected. She also changed the Office of Civil Rights manual, and that sounds like, oh my God, what a stupid, boring thing to think about, but it actually is the guidelines by which investigators determine whether or not there is discrimination happening in schools against kids based on race, based on sex, based on disability, et cetera. And the changes in the OCR manual were such that if they found, if they had a case of one child being discriminated against, they changed the manual so that the investigators couldn't look to see, gee, are there other kids being discriminated against as well? Is this a systemic problem? Nope. They were not allowed to look at that. And that really is undermining the ability of the Federal Office of Civil Rights to protect marginalized children's students' rights. So all of these things, and in court cases, they intervened in a North Carolina college admissions affirmative action case. They were amicus in a Harvard affirmative action case. They filed a case against Yale. They intervened in a Connecticut Title IX a private suit that was opposing trans-inclusive policies for sports athletes. So, you know, all of these things, I'm hoping pretty quickly, as quickly as it can be done well and appropriately, and will be upheld in court, the Biden administration really needs to undo all of those things.
A lot of that, of course, would happen under the leadership of whoever takes over from Betsy DeVos at the helm of the Education Department. There's a couple of names that are being floated around right now for Biden's Education Secretary, among them top union leader Randy Weingarten. Who have you heard? Whose names have you heard being bandied about? And are you more hopeful than, you know, do you have any recommendations if you had Biden's ear for who you would pick?
Well, we want to make sure it's someone who understands education very deeply and understands that a crucial, if not the crucial role of a Secretary of Education is to protect the education rights of the students in our education systems nationwide. And so, you know, I think obviously Randy is an amazing leader of AFT. I think
the American Federation of Teachers, yeah.
American Federation of Teachers. I think Lily Eskelson Garcia has been an amazing leader of
and her name has also been bandied about.
Yeah, for many years. She actually spoke at our launch of the Education Civil Rights Alliance back in November 2017. So, you know, so those are two amazing education leaders. You know, I hesitate to name any additional folks, but I am sure that many of, in fact, I know that many of my colleagues in the education world, and particularly in the education civil rights world, are making appropriate suggestions in terms of names, both for the secretary position and also for the critical assistant secretary for civil rights as well.
Let's talk about the broader issues around education that needed addressing even before the pandemic, even before Betsy DeVos came along, and that was education inequity. And we touched on this earlier in the conversation, but now we have this added issue of massive funding shortfalls that would only worsen the inequities, the racial segregation, the neighborhood differences in quality access to education. What does Biden need to do to address states' massive funding shortfalls in the next fiscal year?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Thank you, Sonali, and really, really important. You know, his promises on the campaign trail were amazing in that respect. You know, tripling Title I funds for education of disadvantaged children. So that goes to kids in low-income schools and districts. Increasing funding for teacher mentoring and professional development, leadership development, and also helping to get more teachers into high-demand areas where we've had some shortages. Special education, bilingual education, also helping to get more teachers of color. You know, right now we actually have the majority of kids in schools being kids of color, and yet a very small percentage of the teacher population is teachers of color. And also it's overwhelmingly a female teaching workforce. And so it'd be great to have some gender diversity as well. Biden has also talked about fully funding in quotes, it's actually 40% funding, federal funding for special education. You know, kids with disabilities were not getting the services that they needed and that they were entitled to under federal special education law. And so with COVID hitting, that was just exacerbated. So the ability of children with disabilities to get the services they need to just keep from falling backwards in terms of keep from regressing in terms of education skills, no less to actually advance their education skills. The lack of services is preventing them from doing that. And so it's really important to have both in a COVID emergency package to have significant funding for K-12 education, which we're anticipating at least, $200 to $275 billion, I've heard numbers being thrown around for in terms of what's needed in a COVID package for education, but then also additional funding long-term, because it can't just be a one-time investment. There's also talking about doubling the psychologists, nurses, social workers, and other mental health professionals in our schools. Well, kids had behavioral issues before COVID. Now we have kids who have experienced a whole bunch more trauma and are, when they go back to school in person, are going to be experiencing that trauma, and trauma in kids tends to show itself. And the way it shows itself is in terms of behavioral issues. And if the approach of schools is what it's frankly all too often been, which is let's suspend them, let's expel them, or let's arrest them. And let's have police in schools to make sure we're doing lots of that arresting. And so the hope is that we now have an administration that will help provide with that doubling of psychologists, nurses, counselors, et cetera, mental health professionals in schools, provide the services needed to address behavioral issues as a learning developmental approach for kids. You know, if they're failing in math, we don't suspend, expel them, or arrest them. If they're failing on behavior, we do. And so we need to instead, like in math, figure out, well, why aren't they learning these lessons? What's going on? How do we actually break through and make sure that these young people are able to succeed? Because they're going to grow up one way or the other. And I can tell you the outcomes, if they go into the school-to-prison pipeline, for all of us as a society, are a lot worse than the outcomes for all of us as a society if children succeed in school.
There's also so that's mostly K through 12 education. There's also the higher education situation. One of the promising things that Biden has alluded to is the forgiveness of college loan debt. And this can also impact K through 12 students, whose parents might be saddled with debt. So how important is that?
And teachers as well.
Yes, absolutely.
The canceling up to $10,000 in student loan debt is really, really important. Also, President-elect Biden's promise to make attending public universities and historically Black colleges tuition-free for families earning under $125,000 a year, making community colleges tuition-free.
And I'm just going back to the $10,000 of forgiveness. $10,000 is not very much at all. I mean, really, couldn't he wipe out college student debt, especially that owned by the government, with a stroke of a pen?
Well, there's a hope that he will be able to do a lot more in terms of loan cancellation. You know, we'll see what he's able to accomplish. And obviously, some of this agenda that we've been talking about, he can do with the stroke of a pen. Some of it, he's going to need Congress. And we don't yet know what the Senate will look like in terms of amenability to many of these particularly dollar-based needs in our nation for education improvement. You know, resource equity right now in education is so critical. You know, to have $23 billion in difference in investments in school districts with high populations of whites versus students with versus districts with high population of kids of color, that's unforgivable. Wow. In this nation, that $23 billion difference between schools that white kids go to versus schools that kids of color go to, that's unforgivable in this nation. So the importance of these investments can't be understated, but he will need Congress to make those investments.
Well, finally, Miriam, do you have any hope in terms of the, you know, vaccines being a success, successful studies of vaccines being announced, and Biden's win for an educator? Is this finally the sort of light at the end of the tunnel that many people are looking forward to 2021 for a better place for education than we've seen?
I would say we have a telescope through which we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're not yet seeing the light. And here's why. Look, I'm not a public health expert. I work on education and civil rights. But the reason is we have to be realistic. Even if tomorrow the two vaccines that seem to be really great, you know, are approved, the ability to have, I understand you need like two doses of either of them. So the ability to have two doses going to everybody in the country, you know, that will take a substantial amount of time. And so, you know, it's not clear when exactly we'll be out of the woods in terms of COVID, but, you know, for folks that are saying by the end of the year, by January, I think they're going to be as sorely disappointed as all of us when we went home in March and thought we'd be back in a month.
Right. And also maybe there should be some reality-based thinking on a Biden administration. You know, he is a centrist Democrat, or he has been historically. When Democrats have taken the White House, they've often come in promising progressives great change and often left office deeply disappointing most people. And so we should, you know, certainly, I think, view promises from Biden with a grain of salt. And I know that there's a lot of activists, even in the education realm, that plan to hold his feet to the fire on promises made during the campaign.
I think there are many of us that will be hoping to hold feet to the fire on this. And, you know, we are hoping that he and the first lady elect, I don't know, the incoming first lady,
right.
and, you know, and the vice president as well, we hope really will be powers for undoing the bad things that have happened over the past 4 years in education and for our most vulnerable students in particular, and in really trying to address the fact that, look, 4 years ago, it wasn't like it was nirvana for marginalized students, right? So there's a whole need to really make some significant investments and significant shifts towards equity in our education system.
Miriam, give out a website for the work that you do on the Educational Civil Rights Alliance.
Sure. It's edrights.org.
That's edrights.org. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali. Same to you.
My guest has been Miriam Rollin, Director of the Education Civil Rights Alliance, convened by the National Center for Youth Law. We've been discussing Betsy DeVos's legacy as Education Secretary and how Biden can rebuild the nation's education department. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.